Welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast, your source for information on hunting, fishing, and all of your outdoor passions.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. My name is Mike Anderson, here with my co-host, Solomon Bach. Solomon, how are you doing on this fine day?
Just fantastic.
Yeah, great to hear. So I'm excited, and the reason I'm excited is because spring is here, and that means turkey season.
That was my best yes. turkey impersonation.
That, you know, that wasn't half bad.
Was it?
Wasn't half
maybe
bad
Maybe I'll leave
at
the
all.
Call at home this year.
I don't really recommend yeah, that. Not. But yeah, so today with us, we have Wren Flatland, pro staff and part-time now for the Eau Claire store. And yep. Wren, how are you doing today?
Doing great, yeah.
Good to hear. So, you know, right before we hit the record button on this, we were talking a little bit about turkey season and tag structures, and you did draw a tag this year, right?
Yep, first season.
First season. So when is first season?
Oh, hang on. I got to look at the calendar here. I have it written down on my planner. The actual date that I start, my tag starts, is April 17th. And then it ends on the 23rd.
Okay.
That's nice. Organization right there. Knowing that off the bat.
There we go. Yeah. I am super jacked for turkey season too, because I drew a North Dakota tag. My wife drew a North Dakota tag. And then Minnesota's over the counter. So I'm going to be chasing a bunch of turkeys this spring. So I'm super jacked for it. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about like your strategy and preparation for this season. So what are you doing right now, and what will you be doing up until turkey season?
So currently I'm just looking for the areas that I'm going to be hunting for the tag that I drew. I put in for zone 4, but there are bonus tags that are available as well. So I'll probably pick up at least one or two bonus tags. Last year I had 5 tags total. So I just picked up as many tags as I could in different zones too, and then just hunted when I could. And I ended up harvesting 2 turkeys last year myself, and then helped other people get turkeys as well. But my preparation for it is, I know I have 1 tag right now. Our bonus tags haven't gone on sale yet. They go on sale on the 18th, so next Monday. Put that on your calendars, guys. You can start getting bonus tags in Wisconsin on the 18th. But yeah, they go on sale on the 18th, and then I'll kind of get an idea of where I want to go and where I plan to hunt. You know, I have trail cameras out right now, just kind of looking at the normal areas where I normally see turkeys and seeing if I'm seeing the numbers that I see in the last couple years. Some years they're hit or miss. Some years, you know, we have more coyote population that push them out. But typically speaking, we have a decent number on most of our properties. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So talk to us a little bit about like how this winter has like affected or changed your turkey hunting plans, if it has at all.
It really hasn't for me, other than the fact that I lucked out and I drew a first season tag. I will say, like most years, I actually usually put in for second or third just because I hate the cold. I hate hunting in cold weather, and I do it because I love to hunt, but I lucked out and drew a first season tag this year, which I'm assuming it's going to be a little warmer. I will say our numbers are up because it wasn't as hard of a winter on the birds. So we're seeing a lot more birds right now out and about. They're still all grouped up. But I would say for the most part, I'm excited that I drew a first season tag because I'm going to get into it right at the right time that I usually enjoy it. The winter wasn't nearly as cold and harsh on the birds as it had been in previous years. So sometimes that first season is a blessing and sometimes it's not. So with it being as mild of a winter as it was, that first season, I think I hit the nail on the head with that tag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree with that too. And that's kind of how my turkey hunting is going to be going too. Because like I've hunted opener turkey where like I'm in my snow camo. But like this year, it's, you know, things are going to be greening up a lot earlier. It's going to be nicer getting out earlier. And I don't know how much the actual like breeding season is going to be fast forwarded, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to find out anyways. I've got this piece that I like to hunt in North Dakota where it's kind of on a peninsula of the river, and like I'm kind of at mercy of the seasons and Mother Nature, because like if the river's super high at that time, the turkeys kind of check out a little bit. But you know, knowing this year there wasn't a ton of snow. We don't have snow right now, so we're not going to have that crazy amount of runoff. So then rivers are going to be a little bit lower. So I think, you know, cautiously optimistic, they're going to be into that spot pretty good. Mm-hmm. So
I've got to keep the fingers crossed.
Yes, exactly.
I always go with a couple bonus tags. Not that I ever, you know, think I'm going to fill them all. I don't want to be greedy or, you know, try to go and harvest all five turkeys, but I get a couple extra bonus tags because then I have the opportunity if I'm not harvesting one in an earlier season. And then also like I can play the weather a little bit more. Like I have more time to turkey hunt instead of just a 1 week period. Mm-hmm. 'Cause only hunting for 1 week, I mean, that's not enough to feed my addiction. So
is that what the first season is just 1 week?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Nice. Our seasons here in Wisconsin are 1 week long. So it goes from Wednesday to Tuesday.
Okay. So what happens if you like don't fill your tag during that week? Are you just done or does it like open up later in the season?
So that's why I buy bonus tags. I may fill my turkey tag in my first season, and that's great. But if I don't, I have to have a bonus tag to hunt another season. So we have first, second, third, and fourth. And then you can usually get a bonus season from fourth, fifth, or sixth. So you can get bonus tags for those.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And then there's different units, too. So, like, if you want to buy a fourth season tag in C, then the next day you can go buy a fourth season tag in B or zone B. So like depending on where, like last year I doubled up on two different zones in the same season because I knew I was going to be hunting like a border property where I might have the opportunity to hunt, you know, like this side or this side. So I had a tag for both. But I could have harvested a bird on both sides too, if I wanted to, because I had two tags for that season.
That makes sense.
So I always do a bonus tag just in case. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's definitely different from my turkey hunting tag structure. Because, like, North Dakota, it's you get your tag or you don't, and the season's open the whole year long. Doesn't really matter what weapon. It's like, you got a turkey tag? Great. You can go whenever you want, like, for as long as you want, as long as the season's open. And then I hunt a lot of Minnesota, too. And that one's similar but different to like your tag structure, because basically like you apply for these 5 or 6 day windows and say like you apply for the first one A or the second one B. If you don't fill your tag, then you can wait until like the last few seasons arrive and then it's open to everybody. So and then what you can do too is like you can apply for an archery tag and then that's open. You can hunt the whole year. But then, like, if you want to do shotgun, then it's got to be restricted to those specific seasons. So what I've done before is I'll apply for, like, the last season that you have, like, designated dates. And then it opens up to if you don't fill. So then I got, like a 3 or 4 week window or whatever that I can hunt. And usually it works well because, like, it tends to get a little bit better later in the season because things open up, like warm up a little bit more, green up a little bit more. They get a little more excited about like that breeding and become really receptive to calls and stuff like that. But this year's going to be different. I think that first season right when it opens up is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, now that everybody's talking about their state's tag structure, I've just moved to Fargo recently, but I'm still technically a South Dakota resident, so I'm going to throw my South Dakota tags in there. But I finally drew a shotgun tag for South Dakota, which I've had, well, like you said, you usually don't get preference for stuff. Usually you just draw right away. Usually that's the same for where I applied for in South Dakota, too. But 3 years I did not draw it for some reason. So I've got 3 years of preference and finally got it this year. So I've got that tag, and then also a couple archery tags for East and West River of South Dakota too. So we'll all be getting some,
there
getting
you
some
go.
Birds down.
Turkeys hopefully. Be flopping this spring.
Yeah. My goal is to get out to South Dakota and do like the Black Hills. Oh, I really want to do that and then do some shed hunting at the same time.
100%. Yeah. Let's make it happen. That'd be awesome.
That'd be super fun. Have you done much for shed hunting yet this spring?
No, so a lot of our deer are still holding. Like, I'm not going in there and pushing them deer out because I want them to drop on our property. And I have many deer with both sides on, still on camera.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy to think about, too. Like, it's, you know, you always get some that hold a little bit later than others. But, yeah, this year they've really been hanging tight. But, I mean, that's a good thing, too, because that means they're healthy. You know,
yeah,
their testosterone
winter,
levels
sure.
haven't dropped like crazy to make them shed. And, you know, I've got a pretty good feeling that they're going to be growing some bone this year.
Hopefully.
So, yeah, because like last year in our area was just absolutely brutal for a winter. And I had this buck that came up to like 5 yards during rifle season. And I knew the deer from trail cameras and, you know, I got a really good look at him at 5 yards and he was definitely a 3-year-old deer. And I was like, man, I've shot enough 3-year-old deer in my day where like, I'm going to let you pass. I'm going to try and shoot you at 4. And he made it through the year, but the winter was so bad that he had less inches than the year before. 'Cause like I picked him up on camera in like late July and I was like, that's the same deer. 'Cause like he had his right side was awesome, but his left side was like not awesome. He was just, you know, kind of a funky 3-point side. And then he showed up on camera. I'm like, yeah, that's the deer for sure. But like, why is he not bigger? You know? So I was like, oh, it's super frustrating. But, yeah, he did end up getting shot this year. So it's like, well, that was kind of a wasted effort for, you know, not shooting that deer. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, that's...
You just get to find another one, though.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Like my fiance, he always says it's almost more satisfying to watch a really big deer walk by you and know that you could have taken the opportunity and you didn't, than it is to shoot a deer that's young.
Yeah.
Like, if you have expectations for yourself, you should take pride in the fact that you let that deer walk. So.
And that plays into the social media stuff, too, because it's like sometimes all you see is the big stuff that people post and like, oh, you know, don't shoot the small ones or something like that, right? But, I mean, if you have one coming by that you've maybe got some history with or something and you want to let it grow another year, I mean, you know that to yourself. Like, it's not something that has to be broadcast to the world, and that means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of get that sense of pride and accomplishment. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. I've hit a stage in my hunting career mm-hmm. where – I'm okay with letting that deer walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
I'm not quite to that stage yet. I haven't shot too many bigger caliber deer yet. So, you know, some of the deer that Jason was letting walk this year, I was like, oh, I wish I could have had an opportunity. But it is what it is. You know, that's part of it. And I think now watching him pass the deer that he has, I'd almost feel guilty if they came in front of me and I had harvested it. I think I would then want to give that deer another year. So I definitely am starting to feel more that way.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Like we've got, I hunt next to relatives in northern Minnesota, and I've got a cousin that bow hunts pretty hardcore. And one of the deer that I had on camera that I was like, oh man, he's borderline. I might shoot him. He ended up passing him with his bow. And then he came right in front of me with a rifle. And I was like, I can't shoot you with a rifle if my cousin passed you with a bow. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
It's funny how that stuff works. But, hey, yeah. let's get back to turkey here. I want to talk turkey. I'm excited for that. So, you know, checking out your social media posts and stuff from years prior, you seem to have a lot of fun hunting with your daughter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so talk to me about what it's like hunting with kids and exposing them to the outdoors.
So, super cool. It's an amazing feeling to be able to help a kiddo get their first experience out in the outdoors. With my daughter, she's not as much into the outdoors as, like, let's say her friends are. She enjoys coming with me because she knows it's something I enjoy, but she's not at the level yet where she's ready to harvest anything. And I'm not putting any pressure on her to do that, but she's still, you know, like last year for Mother's Day, she's like, Mom, let's go turkey hunting. You have a tag and it's Mother's Day. I know that's what you want to do. So she enjoys getting out there and seeing all the animals, and she really enjoys that part of it. So I'm almost thankful that I didn't harvest anything when I was with her. But her best friend, or was best friend, neighbors, so to speak, like basically grew up as sisters, has been very interested in hunting and harvesting a turkey. And a couple years ago, I took my daughter and her friend out to go turkey hunting, and I learned a lot, that's for sure. So my goal was to go do one sit with them and see, okay, what am I missing? I know I'm going to need to bring snacks. What did I forget? You know, I was just planning on going out for a half hour that evening and then prepping that night for the next day, because it's an early morning for kids.
Oh, absolutely. And,
for adults, too.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah. I'll say it. I'll own it.
So my goal with that was just to kind of get a learning experience and let them mess around with the call and kind of get that experience. And we ended up having a tom come into 20 yards and she harvested that bird within a half hour. That's and I was crazy. Like, shoot, I ruined her. Like, she's going to think it's this easy. But she's been driven since, and she actually went and harvested her second bird last year. And, it's really cool to see the spark light up in her eyes and the passion for it. And she gets excited like every year, like when turkey season's coming around, do we get to go back out? Do we get to go back out? And so that's cool. I will say that the biggest thing that I push for people is getting the youth comfortable with the firearm that they're going to be using prior to going out. Nothing worse than having an unstable shotgun for a kiddo, right? Like, mm-hmm. They can't get the red dot on the bird, they are already excited, shaking uncontrollably, you know, like happy in the moment, and they're not comfortable with the gun. They don't understand what the pattern's like or the safety. So my biggest thing with Remedy's friend was to make sure she had shot the firearm many times before we had gone out, and we put up like an actual turkey head target and showed her the pattern on the turkey head, and, you know, let her feel the recoil of the gun and have her be completely comfortable in that situation. And now she has no problem. So.
Very cool. Yeah. Do not put a 12 gauge with TSS in a kid's hands to get them to first start turkey on. I can literally feel like my shoulders starting to ache as I say that.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, my biggest thing about hunting with the youth is just making sure you're prepared and that you're ready to be patient. Make sure you have the right gear for them. Obviously, you know, you want the right gear for yourself. So make sure you have the right gear for them. And a lot of times kiddos don't sit still very easily. So you're more than likely going to be hunting out of a blind. So be prepared for that too. Turkeys can see so well. So when I take kiddos out turkey hunting, it's like, I know I'm going to be in a blind 90% of the time, because there's no way that I'm going to find a kiddo that's going to sit still enough to go sit in the woods and a turkey mm-hmm. can come up to us.
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, I've had a little experience bringing kids out. Like I brought my oldest daughter out before, and it's definitely a different experience. It's super fun, super rewarding, just being able to, like, I'll never forget the first time, like, I saw a group of turkeys with her, and then they let out that first gobble, and her eyes got just, like, big as saucers. And she's just like, what is that? And then all of a sudden they come up and start strutting. It's like, this is the coolest thing ever. And she's just, like, statue still at that point, thankfully. And, you know, someone may have made a poor shot. And,
hey, that's all right.
And not got the turkey. But
that just means you guys get to go again.
Yeah.
And she exactly. gets to go again.
So, yeah. She did everything perfect. Her dad screwed up.
At least you can own up to it, not
yeah,
blame the kid, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's still like probably my favorite memory in the turkey. Yeah. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With Remedy and bringing her out with me, on Mother's Day last year, we had a group of five toms that I think it was five, four or five of them that I watched come from 450 yards away. Like it was a rolling hill set up. I have some friends that have some property in Buffalo County that allowed us to go turkey hunt, and nobody else was hunting the property. And I seen them, and they heard me, and they had to have seen my decoys, and they were aggressive. Like they came in hot, and they got to 80 yards and they hung up at 80 yards, and I couldn't figure out why. Well, this group of, which normally toms would totally eat this up, right? I had this group of Jakes come in from behind my blind and come into my hen decoys. And they hung out with the decoys, and the toms hung up and stuck 80 yards out the whole way around us. And it was the coolest thing for Remedy to see, though, because I had one of the blinds that are see-through. So she's mm-hmm. sitting down below. She's not even looking out the top. Her little chair sits below the window. So nice. She's watching from inside the blind and watching all these birds. And obviously she can move all she wants because they're not going to see her in there. So she's watching them, and these birds are like, you know, 10 feet away from us at this point, and they're all hanging out in with the decoys, and she can see the other toms, you know, fanned out. And it was such a cool experience for her to be able to see all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. And the one cool thing about the rolling hills too, is like, you see them like three hills away and they start coming at you, and then all of a sudden they disappear, and it's like, oh, they're there, when are they coming back up? And then all of a sudden you see them redheads bobbing, and it's like, oh, yeah, there they are,
and they're like hauling.
Yep. They drop back down again. It's like, oh man, I cannot wait for them to show back up. Please show back up. Then all of a sudden they're right,
and then all of a sudden they squirt you.
Yep. Oh yep. Yeah,
that was the story of last year for me. Put in way too much work and had nothing to show for it, but that's okay, because that's how it goes. I was too blessed my first year. Quick side story. My brother and I, we both archery hunt, and hence why we didn't get shotgun tags right away, but we put in for archery tags a couple years ago, and it was our first time going out for turkeys, just because we hunted deer mainly. And we're like, oh, it can't be that hard. Well, we've seen them around, you know, deer hunting and stuff like that. And we went out, or I went out first, and had a couple decoys, sat behind a bush, set them out where I'd seen them before when I was deer hunting in the past, and had a group come in. Shot the biggest tom I saw, and I was like, what the heck? This is easy stuff. Like, what's everybody talking? This is so hard. And then went out with my brother, and he harvested a sweet, I don't even know. I was talking to you about it before, but it's white, but it's not
like
albino.
A smoke phase one,
yeah,
or something.
It's
like
a super cool, like pretty rare bird. And it was his first one. We're like, this is awesome. Like, we're hooked, right? And then, like, the next 2 years, we just got skunked. Like, we couldn't make anything happen.
You guys jinxed yourself. That's what I did with Ellie.
Yeah.
For the next year that she went out, oh, she hunted hard. Yeah. I mean, youth season was brutal. It was so cold, and she sat every day waiting for turkeys, and she hunted so hard. And finally, we ended up getting her a bird, like, the last day of her bonus tag.
That's good.
So
sometimes that's just how it goes.
She has one extreme to the next, right?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems to be the way turkey hunting goes. It's either the most frustrating hunt, or it's just lights out.
And either
just
super
everything
dumb,
works,
or they know your next
read
move
the
before
script.
You do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's such an interesting bird. I get so frustrated with people that don't turkey hunt and are like, well, I see them next to the road every day. I have to stop in my car. How hard can it be to shoot one? Yeah. And it's like, no, you go into the woods and you try and chase them. No, not the same. Not even close.
No.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about your decoy strategy. Like, what's your favorite decoy setup? Like, say, the early part of the season and the late part of the season. Does it change?
For me, not too dramatically. I guess usually as I get later in the season, I have better luck if I actually don't put a male out, which sounds kind of silly. But by the end of the season, for me, what I've noticed is they typically aren't like confrontational. Mm-hmm. Like they've already bred, they're more just looking to come and be around hens. And, you know, they might want to come in and, I guess, breed at that point in time. But usually end of season, I don't do the love triangle, but the beginning of the season, it's always two hens and then either a Jake or it could be a Tom, but I prefer a Jake just because when a big Tom sees a Jake about ready to breed a bedded hen, they're like on it. They're, mm-hmm. they're there. So usually that's what I do is I'll set up basically a triangle of decoys and the Jake looks as if he's going to be breeding the bedded hen.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I vary my setups a decent amount, but my my old go-to is the half strut Jake and then the like a feeder hen or something like that. It's just there's something about that half strut Jake. It's like, you know, turkeys or toms just generally are like not super afraid of them. And you know, like you can see them from a little farther away and you can generally get them to come in with that setup. I mean, I've seen people that have like 10, 15 that they put up into a big group or, you know, just like we use one lone hen, but like that set up the half strut Jake and the hen. That's kind of been my jam.
I'm not good enough to have a strategy. I just put them out there and see what happens.
Yeah. Hey, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. What about Colin? What's your preference or what do you got in your pack?
I have diaphragm and then like a pot call. I have never been good with box calls. I've just never learned it. Never. And everybody says they're the easiest and I can't make them work to save my life. But I usually use a diaphragm call to get out there, and actually be a little quieter. Some people wouldn't agree, but it's, I think, a personal preference thing. And then my pot call, I actually use crystal just because I prefer to use the crystal over slate because whenever it gets a little damp, the slate doesn't seem to want to work. So I have a crystal pot call and that really echoes. Like you can open up your hand and that'll get out there and get the noise out there if you're really trying to be loud. So in the mornings though, like fresh off the roost, I'm really, really quiet. Like, you know, you make sure your calls are not over exaggerated. Like birds are just waking up, just getting out of the roost, so you don't want to push them out of there. Like they know if your call is not a legit call, so you just want to stay quiet in the morning and then you can let her kind of eat once the birds are waking up, so, and they're on the ground and on the move.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, like a lot of it's about like judging their temperature too, you know, like if you just hear like a couple of hens far off in the distance or closer and not super loud, you know, you definitely want to kind of match that. But, you know, if you hear them 200 yards away and there's multiple toms and they're firing off like nuts, like feel free to get after them a little bit then. Yeah.
Yep.
And I agree with you. I think box calls are the hardest. I cannot seem to get them. I can't make it sound right.
I don't know why. I've just never been able to use them. Yeah. I don't even pack one. I just have a couple different pot calls, and then I have a bunch of different mouth calls. Typically, I'm using a youth mouth call, too, because for some reason, the wider ones, I just can't get the right pitch out. My mouth, I don't think it's wide enough for the full adult ones, so I get to be the child.
Yeah. You know, and it's really all about confidence, too. It's like if you believe in your ability to call with that specific call, I mean, that's the one that you want to go with. Like, usually I'll bring all three types with, you know, and generally they'll serve a little bit different purposes. Like, I'm not super great at cutting with a mouth call, but I'm really good at cutting with a box call, you know, and I can't purr with a mouth call, but I can purr really good with a slate or crystal. So, and then, you know, like I can do all of the other general vocalizations pretty good with a mouth call. So it's like when I feel like I need certain types of vocalizations, I'll use that certain call. Or if like you can't move, you know, obviously the mouth call is super effective with that.
Right. So that's why I actually oftentimes will use both my mouth call and my pot call at the same time. And I'll, like I can purr with the mouth call, cluck, yelp, whatever, you know, on both. So it's kind of nice because you can almost act as if you're like two hens going back and forth.
Yeah. And that can be lethal.
Yeah. So like if you can kind of turn your head this way and make your buck call the other way, it really does. I mean, it can be a hot setup if you can get it down right. So, like, as far as cutting and purring and all that goes, I'm able to do it with both. So that helps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But like you said, if they're coming in close and you need to just get them right over that breaking point and your hands on your gun or your bow or whatever you're planning on harvesting them with, you need a mouth call at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Would cool. you say that I know you said you're in a blind a lot more with kids and stuff like that, but when you're out by yourself or whoever else, I mean, do you prefer to be in a blind or you kind of run in gun style or what?
It's just kind of however the day progresses.
Sure.
So oftentimes I'll start the mornings in a blind, and then depending on how the hunt's going, I'll start to run and gun. But most effective is trying to set up as close as I possibly can to them, and I'll typically hunt a field edge with a blind. And then if that's not effective, you know, if I need to get in closer than that in the dark, I'll go and just sit if I know they're going to come off the roost set up at a sure. certain spot. Like, I have this one deer stand that all fall, and whenever I sat in it, I watched all these turkeys come right out of roost right into my food plot. So if I know that they're going to be doing that, I'll just go sit up outside of that and wait. Mm-hmm. But if I... It, like I said, if I'm hunting with youth, I'm for sure in a blind.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's fun to run and gun and try to cut them off, too. That's more towards the end of the season, like bonus tags and stuff, when you're really trying to get after them. But in the beginning of the season, usually they're pretty fresh to the hunters, so I'll sit in the blind and be a little more patient, because I've done it to myself where I'm not patient and I get out and I try to go after them and here they were on their way to meet and I should have just sat still.
Yep.
That's it's a story fine line.
Yes. There's always a lot of second guessing that happens turkey season. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what's in your pack. What's your perfect ideal setup for what you bring with into the turkey woods?
So as far as that goes, I mean, obviously, you know, the calls, you're going to need your calls. And then I bring in my pack, which has my seat pad and basically a bag to hold my bird if I do harvest it. So I'm really trying to go as light as possible. I'll throw a water bottle and then snacks in there, too, if I know I'm going to be out all day. But really, I mean, not a whole lot, because I want to be going in as light as possible if it's just me. That way I can run and gun. Obviously, extra shells and your firearm and room for your layers to come off or go on. But as minimal as possible for me. I don't want to be holding myself back with weight.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny, my first turkey that I ever actually harvested, I carried everything in that day. Got done with work at 4 o'clock, and I had my chair, my blind, my decoys all on my back. And mm-hmm. I, like, went straight to where I knew I wanted to set up. I was going to try to cut them off before roost, and actually it ended up working. But I remember getting up to the top of that hill, because I went over two hills to get back there, thinking they might be out in the field, so I didn't want to drive back there and spook them, so I carried it all in. And I know I will not do that again.
You only have to do it once.
So that's you're not a lot of work.
Yeah, sometimes.
I was sweating.
Yeah,
so.
Sometimes you got to learn the hard way. What are your thoughts on that new Sitka turkey tool belt, and will you be using it this spring?
Yeah, so I was actually looking at that for this call. I was looking at it. I think I will end up purchasing it. It's nice. I do like their Equinox gear, too, like, you know, the fact that it has the bug and tick repellent, you know, it's better for you as far as fighting limes and tick. I mean, this year's going to be horrible for ticks.
Yes, it will.
The dog out 2 weeks ago, and I picked 6 ticks off of my parents' dog. So I know this year's going to be horrible. But as far as the tool belt goes, yeah, I think that's amazing, because it really downsizes everything for you. You don't have to be carrying a ton, but it's all right there.
Mm-hmm.
Got the room for the essentials for the run and
yeah,
gun.
Yeah, kind of an everything you need and nothing you don't for that run and gun turkey hunter. And, you know, like I was really intrigued with it just because of the way everything is placed. you know, mm-hmm. can fit all the essentials in there. And, you know, when I usually bring decoys, I bring them in a decoy bag anyway, so mm-hmm. I don't really need to have them fit in there. So it's right. like, oh, I might have to give this thing a shot.
As long as it's got spots mm-hmm. for snacks, that's what I'm in.
Yeah, you can't forget the snacks. Never go snackless.
Yeah, yeah. The Mountain Ops protein bars are my way to go.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Those are pretty legit. Absolutely. Yeah.
They're like candy. Yep. And it's actually a protein bar. It tastes like a Snickers yeah. bar.
Mm-hmm.
I got a quick question about something you touched on earlier. With trail cameras, I've been getting in the habit of pulling my trail cameras after, either midwinter or like right after the season and stuff like that. And I know mm-hmm. a lot of people either leave them out in those same spots or they'll pull them and then put them back out for pre-scouting for turkeys. Like, how has that been super effective for you? Like, do you think that's actually made a big impact on finding them? Or is it just, not that it's a waste of time, but I want to be told that I should do it so that I actually do it.
So I guess as far as finding turkeys, I kind of always know they're there, so I wouldn't necessarily say it's been effective as far as finding them. For somebody who's looking for them, yes, I think that's a great idea.
Sure.
Typically speaking, I'm catching them on my food plots.
Okay.
And the main reason I still have my cams out is to see what deers are what deer are dropping their antlers and
sure.
what deer aren't and when to go out, and also coyote hunting. I want to see if coyotes are running through there and mm-hmm. Just kind of all of it. I want to keep a check on the property itself. So I do think it's effective. Pulling them in the winter is probably good for somebody in your situation. You don't need to waste that battery January, February, but come March, you can put those cameras back out and check out where they're going, what their patterns are, and mm-hmm. then also see what your deer pattern is doing.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to end up doing that. Maybe it's not too late this year. I probably still got some time. But like you said, you got those spots that you kind of know, like they've been there historically, and you'll probably have a good chance of at least seeing some. Whether or not they outsmart you, that's a different story.
Yeah,
but
they're not really a be-all, end-all for your scouting. I mean, there's no substitute for getting boots on the ground and
for
going
sure.
out to look and see, like, scat and tracks mm-hmm. and feathers and all of that stuff. Like, that's going to be your best information along with, like, using a spotting scope and observing them.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had some pretty incredible success with trail cameras in my certain application for where I hunt, because the way this property sets up, like I mentioned before, the North Dakota spot I go to is next to the river, and there's this really big pinch point. And these turkeys have kind of like their pattern. They're running like a 3-4-5 day loop where they're not there every day, but then like they're there. And when they're there roosting in this certain spot, like they go down into this area and then I know where they roost, and then they come back out and run in a cellular camera. Like I watch them go in there the night before. It's like, okay, they're coming back off this mm-hmm. pinch point in the morning.
Right.
Like I need to be there, and I probably don't even need to call.
Yeah.
They're going to walk right by me.
Yeah.
So
right.
yeah, in situations like that, they can be like ridiculously effective. But you know, like putting them out on food plots and stuff is a good indicator of knowing, like, hey, they are in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeping log of like what days they're there,
just how many,
and how many there are, and stuff like
yeah.
that. So yeah, it's an effective scouting tool, but not your most
gotcha.
Effective scouting
yeah.
tool.
I think I'll probably implement that going forward. I mean, like you said, just kind of keep tabs on deer and see what's dropped and stuff like that too. It'd be beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and if you've got the camera, it's like,
yeah, it's,
you might
either
as well
sitting in a tote or it's
like,
out of the tree.
Let's see what's out there.
Yeah.
Well, and that too, like kind of what Mike had touched on, you know, you can almost see when they're going to be there or what they're doing. Like for me on my properties, you know, we go out with an owl hooter and we can figure out exactly where they are, mm-hmm. you know, for scouting purposes. Where if it's a property that like you don't really have access to be able to do that and locate them from a road or, you know, from an area close by, then yeah, your best asset is going to be a trail camera.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Well, I think I'm convinced.
Yeah. As if you weren't
yeah,
already.
I just needed a little push.
Let's be real. Yeah. All right. So I would love to hear your favorite turkey hunting story. You got
Boy.
One for us?
I have so many turkey hunting stories.
Not
oh
to put
gosh.
You on the spot.
My favorite. Well, I kind of already told you the one about taking Ellie out, my daughter's friend, and like that's probably my all-time favorite, and that wasn't me harvesting it. That was her, and I guess that's the true sportsman in me. I'd rather see somebody else be successful than myself, but like I told you guys earlier, you know, we we rolled up to the property and I parked my truck 150 yards from the blind, and I said, girls, we're gonna go just put all of our stuff out in the blind and see what happens, and we're just going to experiment and see what we're missing for the morning, and we'll leave everything else out here, that way we don't have to carry a ton of stuff in. I had Remedy and Ellie both on the turkey call just cranking away at it. I mean, it was awful. It wasn't great. And I was just letting them have fun and enjoy the time, and that bird came in, and it had come in and it held up a little bit, and I'm like, all right, Ellie, are you stable? Well, the one thing I forgot was our bipod for her. So she's like, I can't get it in the red dot. I'm like, okay. So I reach over and I'm holding on to the gun for her, trying to be as stable as I can be, and here I'm shaking just as bad as she is out of excitement for her. So she ended up shooting it, and the bird dropped right away, and I had her using a break action 410, and I put another shell in it as soon as I got out of the blind, just in case, like, you know, I ripped out of the blind right away to go get her bird. I've had too many situations where I've shot a bird and then it gets up and runs away. So I went out there to make sure the bird was taken care of, and that was probably my favorite as far as like turkey hunting overall. But for me, harvesting a bird, I would say, and you guys will hopefully get a kick out of this situation, but it was actually the same setup, same spot. I call it Ellie's Corner now. And I went and set a blind there 2 years ago, and I set out just two hens. I didn't put a male decoy out. And for some reason, I wasn't having any luck with the male decoys. I couldn't get the toms to come in. So I had been driving around, and I was scouting the area out, trying to figure out where I wanted to hunt. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna hunt there. So I walk in, I set everything up, and I sit down, and I'm sitting there for probably, I don't know, hour and a half. I'm like, okay, I'm getting impatient. I'm gonna probably pack up here soon. And then I hear one gobble, and I was like, oh, perfect. Like, this is money. I'll pull him right down to the field. So he comes in, and I'm recording. At this point, I was really excited. I wanted to record a harvest. So I got my camera, and I forgot, of course, my camera stand. So I'm recording, holding my camera, and I wanted to get him fanned out. Well, it was so windy that day, he never fanned out in the field. So I'm waiting, hoping for him to fan out. He never fanned out and never strutted for me to get good video of him. And he came into my hens at 40 yards and stopped. Never fanned, looked at them like, come on, come with me, and turned around. And I was like, oh crap, he's turning around. So I threw my camera, grabbed my gun, pull my gun up, shoot at him. I hit him, but I only tickled him at 40 yards. And I'm like, oh crap. I had an M2, a Benelli M2, this, and I shot again at 60 yards, completely missed him. He got to 80 yards, and I'm like, well, what I got to lose? Shot again, and I dropped him at 80 yards.
Holy cow.
How did that happen? That is unheard of. Like, that does not happen. So, like, I tickled him, and I could tell he wasn't flying away. Like, he was wobbling, so I didn't get a good shot on him. But I was hurrying, and probably my favorite hunt, just because it was, like, I just shot a turkey at 80 yards. I can't believe that just happened.
That's crazy.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a distance.
Yeah, I have so many fun turkey stories to tell you that I could, times where I just about gave up, just about called it quits, started packing up my stuff, and then all of a sudden they were there, heard them, then they just shut off, and they shut off for an hour, and then they came in, and then it was like, as I'm packing my stuff up, they came in, and I shot one, you know, like, every hunt is so exciting and fun with turkeys that I don't know. I could go on for days on stories on them. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if we did just a turkey story podcast, I mean, it'd have to be like
hours.
A 6 hour one.
Hours. Yeah.
Yeah. It's every hunt is fun and unique, and just it gives me the itch.
Yeah.
I have the itch. I'm so ready for this season.
One thing I kind of like about turkey hunting as compared to deer hunting is it's like, not that it's less, but it's kind of less of a solo sport. Like, you can do it with other people a little bit easier than deer hunting, in my opinion. Like, going out with friends or family or kids or whoever, like, that makes it 10 times more fun, too.
I think I guided 6 different people last year.
Yeah.
So, like, going out and, like, I got my brother his first bird. Oh, I mean, that's probably my favorite hunt, actually. Well, I mean, I literally could go on. Getting other people out too, and being able to go out with other people, like you said, like that's awesome. That's fun. Where like whitetail hunting, you're kind of sitting in a tree stand by yourself.
It's just like, less camaraderie that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're hunting with a bunch of people or like guiding, helping kids get on their birds, it's like you just have an extra tag in your pocket then.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, love it. All right. Well, Renee, thank you so much for your time and your stories and advice. So it was good. Like I said before, I've got the itch. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to start.
So am I. My goal is to harvest a tom with my bow this year. So
there you go. It's not easy. It is definitely more difficult than doing it with a shotgun. I think turkey is the only animal I would rather shoot with a gun than with a bow, but it's so rewarding to actually get one with a bow. Are you going to use like standard broadheads or like decap ones, or what are you thinking?
I have the broadhead. Well, I shot a Jake last year with my bow, and I used, it's like the hybrid.
Oh, okay.
So partially fixed and then expandable, the Rage ones.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And that worked really well. I harvested a Jake at 30 yards. He came into 20 yards, and I was like, no, I really want a tom. And then he went out to 30 yards, and he stayed there. And I'm like, okay. And I shot him.
Yep.
Because I've never shot a bird with my bow, so I thought it would be a cool experience, whether it was a tom or a Jake. Yeah. So that's the first Jake I've ever shot, actually, after many toms. And I was like, I'm going to take pride in this. Like, I shot a bird with my bow. This is awesome. So.
Yeah.
Have you ever shot the decap broadheads?
I have. I have never killed one with a decap.
I'd like to see that in person.
Yeah. I would too. It's a little bit wild. But yeah. I shot one with a decap, but I shot it about 3 inches too low and it bounced off of him. So that was pretty frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've wanted to shoot a decap, but I've got long arms and my draw length on my bow is 33 inches. So like even the stock arrow they make for those, the decap portion of it would still hit my riser. So I don't know. I got to find something to fix that, because I would like to shoot one with that. That'd be a lot of fun. It'd be cool to see, like you said.
Yeah, utilize like somebody else's bow with a shorter draw length maybe.
Yeah, who knows? We'll figure something out.
Figure it out.
Then I just need to find some turkeys. So we'll start with that.
Step one, locate turkeys. Yes. Yep. Step two.
Yeah, I definitely did the body shot. I wasn't going for a head with mine. broadheads. So, and it was still lethal. It ran a little ways, but it died. Mm-hmm. So I hit the vitals.
Yeah, I've had other turkeys too with like, and the reason I moved to decap broadhead was I had shot a turkey which I thought was the perfect shot, and you know, it flopped around and then it ran away, and I was like, there's no way this turkey's going anywhere, and I never ended up finding it, and it just left a really sour taste in my mouth, and I was like, all right, you know, I'm just using the decap broadhead, and then you know, like, you either whiff it or you get it, you know, there's really no in between. And I guess somehow I kind of found an in-between where I hit it, but I hit it a little bit too low, and it just literally, like, bounced off of him. That turkey was like, whoa, what the heck happened right there? Yeah. Talk about a humbling experience there.
Oh, you're telling me. I tried to shoot a bird with my – so I did a filmed hunt last year. It was going to go on the outdoor TV channel, and I'm like – how cool would it be to do this with a 410? Well, I had let the youth gal use it 2 weeks prior, and lessons learned, I didn't shoot the gun before I went out on the hunt. And she had knocked the red dot off. And talk about a humbling hunt. This beautiful tom came in 40 yards. I'm like, 410 TSS load will get to 40 yards. I'm good. Are you good? You got it on film? Yep. Shot him. He dropped, he flopped. I was like, yeah, we're excited. We, you know, high five, moving forward. We both look up and the bird gets up and I'm like, oh crap, put another shell in, cause it's a single shot, 410. Cock the hammer, pull the trigger on him at 40 yards, click. What? Pull the hammer, click. I'm like, oh, I got a dud shell. So I take the dud shell out. By the time I get my third shell in, he's at 80 yards and he was gone. And jeez, all on film for a TV show.
That's the real life side of turkey hunting right there.
Yeah. Talk about humbling.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeez. But hey, still fun, still memorable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So cool. All right. Well, Renee, thank you for your time and, you know, best of luck this upcoming turkey season.
Thank you. You guys too. Now that you both got your tags, hopefully I'll see some pictures and some success stories. So
that's the goal.
Same to you. We'll be following along.
All right.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Shiels Outdoors Podcast. Stay tuned for future segments and visit our social media pages, Shiels Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram, for daily updates.